Years ago, maybe it was 12 or 13 years, I was with my then toddler at the Sacramento Zoo. And we were watching a lemur swinging around its enclosure. And I became a little bit distracted by something. It may have been the baby that I was wearing in a sling at the time. And I came back to focus fairly quickly when I heard another mom who's standing nearby, saying in that voice that moms often use for toddlers, "Oh, you are on the inside." Turned out that my little boy, who had been hanging or climbing on the fence that separated the humans from the animal enclosure, had found his way through or under the fence, and indeed, he was on the inside. Now, he wasn't inside the animal enclosure, of course, right? And you know how this kind of thing works. There's the enclosure made of whatever it is. In this case, I think it was a very large wire cage. And then there's some space, right? 3 or 4 feet, something like that, with some green stuff, plantings or whatever. And then there's a fence at the edge of the paved walking area where the humans are supposed to go. And my little boy had gone through the fence, but he wasn't actually close to the cage itself. In fact, I think he wasn't even actually heading for the cage. I think he had just been playing on the fence, and he found himself suddenly on the other side. You know, surprise! So, of course, you know what I did, right? I leaned over, I immediately picked him up and brought him to the human side of the fence. And everything was fine, and I don't even think he knew anything had gone wrong. I was very grateful to the mom who had so graciously and gently pointed this out to me, and I was pretty embarrassed that my attention had wandered from my very active little boy. So, what happened in this story is that the zoo's system worked exactly as it's supposed to work, right? The zoo needs to keep the animals safe from the humans. That's the main thing. It has to keep the humans safe from the animals, but mostly the animals need to be kept safe from the humans, especially with an animal like a lemur, right? Pretty harmless, not much of a threat to a human. So the zoo can create this enclosure that keeps the animals safe and contained in an environment that it can be comfortable in. And then they put that enclosure several feet away, several feet back from that border marking the walkway. And there's that simple fence there so that you can just be reminded, here's the border between where you go as a human and the area that's around the enclosure. And that fence is a simple and fairly attractive, relatively attractive reminder to the humans just not to get too close. And even if someone happens to move past the fence, the animal is still safe, right, inside its enclosure. And the chances are good that no harm will come to anybody. The real goal of the zoo, of course, is to keep the humans out of the animal enclosure itself, because that's what could get a little dicey. So this is relevant today because of our gospel story. So immediately before what we just read, and you heard this last week if you were in church, Jesus told his disciples that unless their righteousness exceeded that of the scribes and the Pharisees, they would never enter the kingdom of heaven. And then immediately after that, he started on what we heard today, beginning with that part about murder, right? That it's not just that you shouldn't murder, but you shouldn't be angry, shouldn't insult someone. And then that's the pattern that this part of the Sermon on the Mount takes, right? You've heard it said, but I say to you, and we get it about murder, adultery, divorce, and swearing an oath. So what Jesus is doing here is called in Hebrew chumrah, and one of you may know how to pronounce that better than I do, but chumrah is the idea of building a fence around the Torah. That is to say, protecting the precious commandments of the Torah by creating boundaries that will prevent someone from even accidentally violating one of the commandments. And this is an ancient practice that comes from Deuteronomy 22:8, where the commandment is given to build a parapet around the roof of a house, a new house if you're building. And this would be, of course, a house with a flat roof that can be used as an outdoor living space. And so you build this parapet so as to prevent blood guilt if anyone falls off the edge. It's not enough to just say, well, that person should have been more careful. They shouldn't have gotten so close to the edge. It's your responsibility as the house builder to do everything that you can to prevent this terrible accident. So think about it this way. If the commandment is not to commit murder, wouldn't it be a good idea to never get into the situation where you might be tempted to commit murder? That is to say, to not indulge in anger or insult or not let disagreements fester and grow worse? Or if the commandment is to not commit adultery, wouldn't it be a good idea to avoid lusting after someone, or if you can't avoid that in their presence, stay away from them? If the commandment is not to swear falsely, how about just not swearing at all? Just say yes or no. These are fences, right, that prevent people from getting even into the situation in which they might risk breaking one of God's commandments. So there's a few more things here that we need to discuss. This is a big passage. I left out the divorce passage just now because that's a little bit touchy for us, isn't it? So Jesus is saying that anyone who divorces his wife, except for the grounds of unchastity, causes her to commit adultery. And whoever marries a divorced woman commits adultery. That's what it says in the text. So it's obvious from the way this is worded that Jesus, who was enlightened for his time concerning gender roles, right, was dealing with a culture with very strict concepts of who gets to be a full human and who gets to be property, or at the best, maybe less than fully human. Jesus' words are directed only to men because it's assumed the men are the active party in the divorce. Jesus was aware that if a woman was divorced from her husband, she had a very real risk of winding up either a prostitute or a beggar, because those were the roles that a woman without a husband or some other male protector could have in that society, in that culture. So the fence that Jesus is erecting with this commandment about divorce is not a fence to protect the permission to divorce a wife at will. Rather, it's a fence to protect the wife from wrongful divorce and to preserve her well-being against the whim of an unkind or unthinking husband. Divorce that Jesus is talking about is completely different from the divorce that we know in our society. He's talking about two different things. There's a couple other things I want to talk about. So, in the gospel passage that I mentioned, the one from last week, Jesus mentions the kingdom of heaven. In this week's passage, Jesus talks about the hell of fire. And these terms, when you hear them, they've been part of our cultural inheritance, our cultural imagination, for such a long time that they bring up images, right? We think they know what they mean, and we sometimes just don't even question those images, even when we know they're false. So think about it. The image for the kingdom of heaven in popular culture, what do you imagine? Some kind of beautiful place above the clouds, maybe among the clouds, like walking around on the clouds, right? There's angels wearing long white robes with big white fluffy wings from their shoulders. They're playing harps. God is there, a big old white man with a long white beard sitting on some big golden throne, enjoying the whole thing. Maybe there's gates, right? There's gates to get in. Maybe you can imagine them as pearly. I'm not really sure what that would look like, but you might even imagine St. Peter, right? Some kind of St. Peter figure with a big book who checks to see if your name is written in it before you can go in. Yeah. It's a load of hooey. That is not what Jesus is talking about, right? Jesus uses the phrase, the kingdom of heaven, to refer to being near God's presence. Near to God's presence. So it gets connected with the sky, right? Because the cosmology of the time, the idea was that above the vault of the sky, which was solid, right? Solid vault of the sky, above that is like this place where God lives. And so being near to God's presence could involve being up in the sky, like maybe after you die or something like that. But Jesus was not limiting the kingdom of heaven to an afterlife. Jesus clearly and repeatedly in Matthew's gospel, which is the one we read today, Jesus refers to the kingdom of heaven coming near to people during their lifetime. During their lifetime, the kingdom of heaven comes near. And we know intuitively that this is true, right? We know that there are times that we sense God's presence near us during our lifetimes. Of course, we often forget that God is close to us even when we don't sense God's presence. But that's another topic, maybe for another day. We only have so long this morning. So when Jesus says that unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven, he's not talking about like missing out on the afterlife you've always hoped for. He's talking about the present and immediate consequences of unrighteousness. Think about it. When we're angry, for example, or when we're insulting people or lusting, whatever it may be, we're focused on our own selves. We're focused on our own ego's desires. And we are essentially preventing God from coming near us. It's not that God wouldn't still try, but when we're caught up in our own stuff, we're not available to God's presence. Okay, and now the hell of fire. Again, we have this idea in our cultural imagination, right? A dark place lit with glowing coals and flames and the screams of people being tormented. There's a devil, mostly red, right, with horns and a tail and a pitchfork, with demons to do his bidding and make the torment worse. And in today's gospel, it sounds like, on the surface, that Jesus is threatening to send people there if they don't do what he says is right. Again, a load of hooey. So first, note that Jesus never implies that he or God or the Holy Spirit actually condemns anyone to what he's referring to as the hell of fire. Okay? It's not in the text. You won't find it there. So the word here, and you've probably heard this one before if you've been listening to sermons for a while, the word here is Gehenna, which refers actually to a valley, a physical place, a valley south of Jerusalem where refuse and dead animals were taken to be burned. It's basically a gigantic trash heap, right? It was not a nice place. It did not have a happy history because in ancient times even from the time that Jesus was alive, it had been known as a place where people would bring their children to sacrifice them. So it was a horrible, horrible place. This is an actual physical place. Jesus' listeners knew where it was. They could have walked there if they had wanted to. Nobody would, of course, because it was awful. It was filthy and smelly and full of fires and terrible. So if it had any symbolic meaning, it was like this meaning of being this awful place, full of filth and fire and terrifying history and smelly and not a place that you want to go. So over time, we've added so many cultural assumptions and stories to the gospel texts that we have this idea that if we're angry with someone, then God will condemn us to hell forever after we die. And that is not anywhere in the text. Nowhere. That's not what God is like, right? As we heard in our first reading today from Deuteronomy, God's commandments bring life. And as we remember, the summary of the whole law is to love God and to love our neighbor as ourself, right? And Jesus, in today's gospel, showed us what it looks like to build a fence around some of the specific commandments in the Torah, to protect the commandments of God so that we won't violate them even unintentionally. So here's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering if today our challenge is to think about what it looks like to build a fence around the summary of the law. What does it look like for each of us in our own lives to create a set of behaviors, a set of habits, practices for ourselves that help to support us in loving God and loving our neighbor and can prevent us from violating these commandments, even by mistake? How would your life change? What would that look like for you? Do you think that there is one thing that you could do this week toward building that fence?